Ben Fagan here with another episode of Career Cash, the podcast. And on this episode, I sit down with public health advisor Gabriella Wyke. On the episode, Gabriella and I talk about building a career in public and global health, why finding a mentor is so important, and why you need to be sure you take care of yourself. It's an awesome conversation. Let's get to it. Well, I am super excited like I am for just about every episode. And today I'm sitting down with Gabriella Wyke. Gabriella, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the way I start every episode to bring a little context to everybody listening, watching is catch us up on what you do on a day-to-day basis. We'll talk a little bit about that. And then we're going to go back in time a bit, how you kind of got there. And then we'll look forward a little bit in terms of where you think you're going ahead and maybe some projects that you're working on or are interested in. So what's your day-to-day look like in the job that you, in the role that you have now?
Yeah, so I work for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and in my current role, I'm a public health advisor, where I help manage funding for global health projects overseas in various countries. Many of these projects include capacity building for emergency responses, outbreaks in developing countries, and epidemiology training for in-country staff.
Very cool. So in that role, and I know you mentioned, we get into more detail about this too, is that you recently transitioned in some way from doing more on the ground stuff to more of the administrative side of things. You know, what is the difference between those two roles in somebody, for somebody in your position? Can you kind of explain, you know, the responsibilities from, you know, those two different sides of things?
Yeah, absolutely. So in my previous role, I used to be a quarantine public health officer at the Miami quarantine station. And just to give a little bit of context, there are 20 quarantine stations across the country, each located strategically at major ports of entry, where we look at protecting the public health of anything coming into the country. And that was very much boots on the ground work, where we would look at we would help inspect items that might come in that could be a threat to public health. We would maybe stop people from boarding flights if they had an infectious disease, or we'd help in contact tracing efforts in airplanes or conveyances that carry people from country X into the United States. Now, that was very hands-on heavy, especially during COVID-19, then with monkeypox, because we were, as you can imagine, swamped. But now I transitioned to a role where I am at, in quote unquote, a higher level. It's not that like I rose through the ranks immediately, but it looks at how we can, they call it the office of the director level, where we can manage all of these moving pieces to help make sure that the people on the ground have the resources and the capacity to do what they need to do.
That makes sense. And so kind of going back in time, we're even going to go back before college, before all your studies, you know, which you have extensive studies that we could touch on in a bit. You know, what was being involved in this industry with, you know, public health and all these things, something that you always thought you'd get involved in? Was there something along the way that kind of, you know, triggered the interest? How did you kind of end up gravitating towards this path?
Yeah, so it's actually funny because, and it sounds really silly now, but growing up, I actually didn't really know what public health and global health was. I think sometimes when you're a kid, and this is actually fantastic on your behalf that you're doing something like this, you think of there's very specific career goals, whether you want to be a doctor, a policeman, a teacher, and maybe a firefighter. There, you know, you have a very basic idea of what people can be growing up. And I always thought, I said, hey, you know, I want to be a doctor, but I never wanted to be a doctor in the way that you see patients or you work in a hospital. That never really was my passion when I was like, this is what I want to do. I wanted to help people in a developing setting. I wanted to help people in a cross-cultural setting. And I do just like sciences and social sciences in particular. So I went to Lynn and I was like, okay, I'm going to study biology as my major, which was great. And then I took on a second major, which was international relations. And in international relations is where I learned, oh, there's this whole world of global health and public health, but you don't actually have to be a medical doctor. I do have a PhD in public health, so I do hold a doctorate level degree, but it's not to treat patients. It's to look at system-wide public health, how public health works in general. So that's kind of how I got to it. But I think a lot of people, you know, when you think of how you get into a field, most people in their field, unless it's something like one of those categories that I said before, you don't really know about it until you start kind of peeling off the layers of what you can be in a career.
Yeah, definitely. And thinking about that time where you know, kind of exposed, because that's something that really resonates with me in terms of coming to school. I wanted to be, hang with me here. We got the webcam. So the audio should still be coming, but you know, it may click in and out there. But that really resonated with me in the sense that, you know, when I went into school, I studied journalism, you know, I, you know, didn't really know exactly what I wanted to do. And through that, I, you know, one of the courses was filming and editing. And before that I was like anti-technology, hated all that stuff, but I had a great professor and it opened up this whole world for me that I didn't know, you know, existed. And so thinking back to that time when you were taking, when you got exposed to this whole world of the world, you know, the global health, what was that like for you? What was going through your mind? And where did you immediately think you wanted to go in that moment? Like when you were back in school in terms of a career?
Yeah. So I remember thinking, so it actually came about when we were looking at the earthquake in Haiti in 2010. I know that, you know, remember Lynn had students that were impacted and unfortunately died from that. So we were looking at that in class. And out of that came, you know, the cholera outbreak that happened in Haiti and everything that came about that, right? So I was looking at this and I was like, wow, this is super interesting. And how can I get to know more about this? During that time, I had my own personal rant as to the failings of the US medical system. So I was like, I really want to get to know how public health works in ways that it should work, that is most efficient. And in this country, it's actually not the case. We are the anomaly in the developed world for public health and medicine. So I was like, hey, you know what? I want to go study somewhere else. I went to do my master's in the UK. Where they have the NHS, where they have, well, it's not perfect. And I know that people in the UK complain about it and everything like that. But when you compare it to a system like the US, where people go bankrupt to pay bills, where people will default on their house to pay bills, right? That's not something that's seen overseas in any other developing country other than the United States. And I really wanted to learn that, because why is it like this here? And as you get into more public health, you realize why. Because healthcare is very expensive, but this, it just kind of grew my desire to continue to learn about how systems work and how, frankly, the US has failed a lot of the US population with the meeting the needs of public health.
And with that in mind, because it sounds like that was something that, you know, meant a lot for you to go and look to try to change and impact and have that role. What did that look like for you in terms of how you wanted to begin starting out to make an impact? Or was that something that you even wanted to do? Did you want to change the U.S. system? Did you just want to learn more? What was that like in terms of saying, hey, there's this flawed system or this system that could be better? What was your intention with, trying to make an impact or build your, I guess, career, around that kind of idea and issue?
Yeah, so I think it was really, as much as I would love to say that I can, you know, change the U.S. system on my own, I need to humble myself and say, you know, it's a long shot. But I think the first step is really understanding what systems do work. Yeah. And while no public health system, no health system across the world, you'll find that is perfect, there are ones that work better than others. And when one works better than other, it reaches more populations. It doesn't maybe cater only to, you know, people that have money or people that can pay for, you know, better services. And I think that was the first step, is really understanding systems that do work, systems that work better than what we have here. Granted, again, there are definite flaws to, you know, health systems in countries that we might look up to, but there are less flaws.
Now, how necessary, since you're, you know, studying, looking at the, on a global scale, how necessary do you feel it was for, you know, somebody coming up to get some education abroad, like you did for your master's? How impactful was that for you? And, you know, is that something that you'd strongly recommend? Or is it, you know, what kind of path, would you take for somebody looking to get involved in a similar field?
So I think there's two parts to that question. I think going abroad and learning about different health systems is obviously very important and was impactful to me and how I view a lot of the systems now. But I actually think most importantly, it helped me grow as a person. I went to Queen Mary University of London, which is a great school, also very international. I learned a lot about the people around me. I learned a lot about what it is to live in a different country. I always recommend people, if they can, to step out of their comfort zone, and that's one of them. So I think it helped me grow, yes, in my field, but also made me grow more as a person. I was also in a very young and naive age. I went at 21. And I thought, like, oh, I know everything. Like, I got this. And in fact, you don't. You have a whole world ahead of you to learn. So I think it helped me as a, you know, a career choice, but also as a growing opportunity for myself.
So thinking back to that time too, you know, going over there thinking, hey, I got this all covered. You know, what do you remember some instances that you kind of ran into? You're like, oh, you know, maybe I don't have everything all figured out.
I think I was trying to get a job. You know, graduated at 22. It was a 1-year program. And I was like, I can conquer the world. I've got this. And then people are like, well, where's your experience? Yeah, mm-hmm. You have a master's degree, but what do you have to show for it? Where have you worked before? I was like, you know, and I had jobs. I mean, I worked in admissions and I worked as camp counselors, but that's not to say, hey, you should hire me. Not only should you hire me, you should pay for my visa to stay. Mm-hmm. And that was it. It showed me that education is very important. It is. And I will never not say that. But your experience is worth almost more. So I think trying to get into a field that can give me experience, which is kind of the double-edged sword that all of us, you know, encounter when we are starting off, is I need a job to get experience, but how do I get experience to get a job? And I think that was one of the things that maybe not necessarily tied to where I went to school or that specific experience, but something that we all come to realize at that time.
So how'd you kind of navigate that quandary, you know, of I got to get a job, but I have to get an experience, you know, that whole cycle? How'd you navigate that at the time?
So I will say I was privileged in the sense that I didn't have at the time a husband, a mortgage, kids. I didn't have anybody to take care of. So what I did was I applied to everywhere in the world that had a job posting that I liked. And it led me to Philadelphia, where I started as working at the Department of Public Health in public health preparedness. And it was kind of just like, all right, where can I apply to today? I remember applying to jobs in like Sweden, in California, in anywhere. And that's a luxury that I recognize that not everybody can do. Some people are tied to their geographic area. I was fortunate enough that I could move around to where the next job opportunity was able to be provided.
And so talking about somebody who may be tied to a geographical area, how can they navigate that problem? What are some resources that they can look into, you know, maybe in that area, realizing that every area is different, you know, in terms of their size, what they have to offer, everything like that. But just in general, you know, what would be some strategies that they could take if they may be tied to a particular area?
Yeah. So, for anybody that looks to work into public health or global health, for public health, I would start with, you know, the health departments, your local or state health department, and then also research assistant positions at universities. Those are pretty big as well. But I think with public health, you know, if you're not in a big city, because either you're working at like a federal agency or a large NGO, those might be your best starts. There are sometimes local community-based organizations that are looking for public health expertise and, you know, community outreach.
Mm-hmm. And now during your time in Philly, it was in Philly, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, my memory's not going to fail me today. Yeah. So, you know, during your time in Philly, how long were you there? What was going through your mind? Cause you eventually did go on and get your PhD. What was that process like in terms of coming from the working world back into school? And how did you kind of see that unfold for yourself?
Yeah, so I actually loved my time in Philadelphia. I had a fantastic team there. And I missed school, but I was also ready to A, earn real money and start to gain this experience that I wanted. And I worked in the bioterrorism and public health preparedness program. And it sounds scary when you say bioterrorism, but that could be, you know, just it falls under the umbrella of preparedness and emergency management work. And during this time, you know, I was soaking up everything that I could, and especially when you're young, but I recommend this at all times, you know, always within the capacity that you can volunteer to learn more skills, right? You want to become the most well-rounded professional in regardless of the field that you're in, but to build yourself up and to also be a team player. And that's what I try to do. And, you know, I went to a bunch of big meetings. I was invited by, you know, my supervisor to do that, but I also was like the person that was doing the meeting minutes and taking notes and doing a lot of quote unquote what you call bit work. Why? Because it was part of my job, but also because that's what's needed, right? And this goes again to any field that you work in, especially if you're young, do the dirty work. It's gonna show a lot for you. But as I was getting more and more comfortable in my role, I think you, when you start trying to figure out what you want to do, oftentimes you run into what you don't want to do more than exactly what you want to do. And I said, you know, I have a great team. I think this is a great city. But I don't know that public health preparedness is exactly what it is for me. Because what you do in this field is that you create a lot of plans and you create a lot of operating procedures to what to do if an emergency happens. And you have to create scenarios as to what emergencies could happen. And this is before COVID. But we were thinking, like, you know, what if an influenza virus hits, you know, Philadelphia? Or what if we have to, you know, dispense prophylaxis at a mass scale, which is all very important work. But I just thought, I want something a little bit more action oriented. I wanna go back abroad. So I started applying again to different areas, recognizing again that I didn't have anything to tie me down anywhere geographically. And that's when I took a position with Mass General Hospital, where they have in the Division of Global Health and Human Rights, they were looking to implement, or they what they do is implement sustainable procedures in developing countries that where expensive medical equipment may not be a thing, or it might not be available. So I took that position after about a year and a few months in Philadelphia, and I moved to Kenya. And I lived about an hour from Kisumu, which is on the west, western Kenya by Lake Victoria. And I spent there, I think, 7 or 8 months, where I worked alongside physicians from the US that would go train and help implement these programs. And I was doing a lot of data collection, data analysis, program coordination. And I absolutely loved it. I fell in love with Kenya. I was so excited. I was learning Swahili. I was traveling a little bit in Eastern Africa. And at that time as well, I was applying for a PhD program because I was at an age, early 20s, where I just couldn't stay still. I couldn't, like, get enough of one place before moving to the other. And it was very exciting, right? So then we were pulled out a little earlier than expected because the presidential elections were going on. And sometimes in certain countries, elections and politics can get violent. And just as a precaution, you know, we left. But at the time, I was going to start my PhD program, so I didn't end up going back. But nevertheless, one of the coolest things I ever did, and I'm just so grateful for that time. Now, transitioning to my PhD, I knew that I wanted to go back somewhere warm. I'm not a winter person. And I was looking at schools in the South, and I was like, all right, FIU, Florida International University, it looks like a pretty good deal. So I applied, I got in, I got a scholarship, and I was like, great, I'm starting. And when I was starting my PhD program, I knew that I wanted to do something more in public health. What I had realized, and this is just from my, you know, limited experience at the time, was that in order for you to rise the ranks in public health, you either have to have an MD or a PhD. Mm-hmm. And I had noticed that in quite a few areas where people that were team leads, that were supervisors and the managerial positions where I eventually wanted to be, had these advanced degrees. Because when you go in the field like public health, especially if you're social sciences, if you're, you know, hard sciences, you either have to have, you know, one of these advanced degrees to excel. And I was like, I don't really know what I want to do in public health. I know I wanted to work in global health and again in underserved communities, but let's try FIU. It seems great. And I was able to work under a fantastic mentor. Her name is Dr. Mariana Sanchez and Dr. Patria Rojas, who they study the Latino community down in South Florida. And a lot of their research focuses on alcohol abuse, mental health, gender, and sexual violence. So this was a new introduction to an area in public health, but it also allowed me to work more on these data analysis and research skills that I would need to eventually work on and defend my dissertation. So all in short, with this trajectory that I have been telling you so far, public health is a very, very big field. Sometimes we think of public health, we might pigeonhole it to one thing, but you have things like, you know, working in underserved communities, you work in global health, you work in preparedness, you can work in chronic illnesses, you can work in nutrition. There's just a wide array of things that you can work in. And then I was, you know, working as a research assistant. And one of the things that, as a research assistant, anybody that's done it before, you get paid very, very little, like nothing. Like you're on the poverty line. So I was always, you know, very grateful for the scholarship I had, but I knew that this wasn't exactly sustainable either because of just the low stipend that you get. And one of the things that was really cool, and this is for any university, you know, always look for a university that has cool internship programs or brings in a big network. I'm walking down the hallway in the School of Public Health at FIU, and I see this video of this student, and he's talking about what he does on his day-to-day. And I'm just like waiting for the elevator or something and just watching this video. I'm like, you know what? That seems really cool. I want to be that person. And I go to my internship coordinator, or she wasn't my internship coordinator. She was just an internship coordinator that I had become friends with. And I was like, who's this person? I want to talk to them. She gives me their information, obviously make sure with that person that it's okay for me to get their information. And I message this person. I'm like, hey, can I invite you to coffee on my treat so you can tell me about what you do for about 30 minutes? I'll work around your schedule. And I just want to learn more. So I did that. And then it went really well. This person told me about what they do. And then I think 6 months might have passed and I hadn't heard anything, not expecting to have heard anything, but it was just, how do I be you? How do I get to that point where you are? And then, you know, a few months later, 6 months later, I get a call from him. He says, hey, there's a position that opened up at the CDC at the Miami Quarantine Station. I would encourage you to apply. And I applied and I got the job. And that's how my CDC trajectory started. I did finish my PhD, although I gave up my scholarship because with a lot of PhD stipends, you can't have multiple jobs. So I finished my PhD. That's the most important part. But through that time, I got my job at the CDC. And then 6 months later, COVID hit and we were just all hands on deck.
Yeah. I can't.
I know that was a whirlwind, so I'm sorry.
Right. Yeah. No. That's such an important thing. You touched on so much there. And one of the, I'm really glad that you brought up that story of you waiting at the elevator looking at the video, you know, because I think that's so valuable in terms of, you know, just asking from people. Because I'm such a big believer in the best way to learn about what people like, some learning about an industry is talking to people who are doing what you want to do one day, you know, and it doesn't have to be anything, you know, over the top, over the moon. You know, like you said, you just went out to coffee, you just said, hey, like, I just want to learn, you know, that's where it starts. And then you not even necessarily needing to expect something from it. And you just never know, you know, where it goes. And it's cliche for a reason, you know, just because it's true. And I just think that really is so cool. And looking back at this whole process, what was getting into the PhD program? Like, was it just FIU and that was it? What was that process like for somebody who's looking, saying, hey, I also want to go into this direction? Because the PhD process is a bit different than, you know, undergrad and even a master's in terms of the application. And so what is that process like, you know, even more specifically for public health?
Yeah, so that's actually a really good question, because when you're looking at graduate programs, particularly a PhD, it's very different than what you look at for undergraduate. With undergraduate, you sometimes look at more of the social life. You look at, you know, overall programs. Oh, sorry. You look at location, which these are all important. But really, when you're looking at a graduate school, especially a PhD, you want to look at who are the professors, what are the areas of research. And for me, it was very specific. What vibe do they give off, right? Mm-hmm. Academia can be very cutthroat, and you have to know what is your learning style. What is the environment that you thrive in? I remember I was researching. I was trying to message some professors in other universities, and the responses that they would give me, it felt very much like, you are here to do my work under my terms, and you figure out your, you know, dissertation on your own. Mm-hmm. And while that might work for some people, I know that's not my learning style, especially because I was not, and I'm still not, you know, a guru in data analysis. Some people can go in and they know exactly what they're going to do. They know the systems that they're working with, but that wasn't me because I was still trying to figure things out. And I remember emailing a professor at FIU, and they were like, oh yeah, you know, we'd be happy to have you. You know, these are the programs we provide. This is how, you know, we have some students that come in with these strengths, while others might come in with these other strengths. And I think that just understanding that, or having a professor understand that students might need help along the way, is very important to me. Because a lot of people that get hung up on PhD programs is because they might just need help. They might need a little bit of guidance in one way. And it's not to say that, you know, it's very much to do with your own will and how, you know, you can manage your project yourself. But if you get stuck, it's very important for me to be able to reach out to a professor, to a mentor, be like, I need help. How can I go about this? When that's often, or I would say often, but it happens to not be the case as much as you would think in academia.
No, that's another, you know, really, really important point that you said, because ultimately you have to find something that works for you. You know, if you're the person that can hit the ground running, you know, all the power to you, you know, but it's about finding those things and also not being discouraged of saying like, hey, you know, there is that culture in academia out there. So there's nothing there for me if I need a little more guidance. And I think there's also a big difference and an important thing to understand too, is, you know, balancing, you asking for help, but that doesn't mean like you're asking for your hand to be held. You're doing it in a proactive way, you know, which I think is, you know, such a big difference in terms of, you know, how you go about operating, you know, in that field. So now kind of getting into the stuff that, you know, back into the stuff that you do today. And, you know, we won't get too deep into, you know, any of the COVID stuff, because like you said, that was just, you know, all hands, you know, on deck with all that. And I can only imagine, you know, I think even nobody working in, you know, even if you're not working in public health, you know, you have some idea, you know, but in what is interesting to me, I think, and this is something that I always find fascinating from industry to industry, career to career, is every career, you know, has their ups and downs, you know, in terms of, you know, some days are a bit more stressful, some days are a bit less stressful. And so, you know, some days you're moving all around, some days you're not, you know, in the work that you do, and when things get kind of up and going, you know, whether it's COVID, whether it's, you know, the day-to-day stuff now, you know, is that something that you gravitate towards, that, you know, that kind of hustle and bustle? Or, and then two, I think more interesting to me as well is how do you personally, you know, navigate those chaotic times when they come?
Yeah, so it's actually interesting because when COVID hit, I remember thinking, working on it, I'm like, this is actually happening. Like, this right. is happening. This is happening.
Yeah, yeah.
In a way that's like, whoa, this is like realizing the magnitude of this problem that we're all working in. You know, we're just little ants in this huge colony trying to fight this problem, right? And I was part of that. At the same time, I was very appreciative that I was able to work in that, because I recognized again just how large this problem was that we were all working for. And I do think that there is definitely some exhilarating aspects to working in a response. But I think after a while, after weekends and holidays and nights that you're working, you want a break. Mm-hmm. And while I would be very excited to work on the next outbreak, hopefully we won't see an outbreak of that response for a while, I also recognize how important what I call times of peace are, where we can get our ducks in a row, where we can step back and say, you know, what were the lessons learned from this response? Because what's also very important is managing your personal life in addition to your work life. And when you're in a constant emergency response mode like COVID, something's going to break down in your personal life. And I have the most supportive husband and family unit that I can imagine. But even then, after a while, you're just exhausted. Mm-hmm. So I am all about the response. And that's one of the reasons why I joined the U.S. Public Health Service and the Commissioned Corps, is so that I can deploy more to these responses. But I also recognize the balance of work and life.
And so what are some of the things, you know, more specifically that are important to you in terms of making sure that you're taking care of yourself? How do you go about doing that for you?
Okay, it's going to sound really simplistic, but I just love like curling up and watching something good on Netflix. It's just, I know it sounds really silly, but it's just being able to focus on something that is not stressful, that's not exactly important. I also do like working out. That also helps me a lot in gardening. But I think I would choose a good show and peace and quiet for a little bit over anything else.
Yeah, just nothing wrong with that. Just giving the time a little reset, a little refocus, and you know, that's I'm all here for that. So no, that's awesome. So now, kind of looking forward, what is, you know, the next steps for you in terms of what are some things that you're working towards in your career, and what are some things that you're hoping to accomplish, whether it's on a, you know, a very large scale, a very small scale, anything in between? You know, what are some things that you have on the list, the to-do list of saying, hey, these are some big things that, you know, I want to take down?
Yeah, so I recently joined. I'm about to have 1 year in the United States Public Health Service of the Commissioned Corps. And this is, I don't know if you guys have heard of it, but it is one of eight uniformed services of the United States. People usually know the five armed forces, you know, the Navy, Marines, et cetera. But we have also NOAA, which is National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Agency, the Public Health Service, which is what I'm in. Now we have the Space Force, but this active duty force is what we call the nation's first responders. We are the ones that deploy to think of natural disasters when there's a need for medical help. We deploy to anything COVID-19 related. Think of monkeypox, think of Ebola, think of outbreaks overseas. We help support those missions. So joining the Commissioned Corps, I wanted to be able to be more of service to our country and also serve the populations in need. We are not an armed force. We don't go to war. We don't carry weapons, nothing like that. But we are there of service because we can get deployed last minute. We can be you know, moved in times of great need. And I hope to be the best officer I can be. And that's, you know, entails a few things. It entails, you know, being able to continue studying. It entails being of service to your community. It entails being a mentor to others that are younger than you. And I hope to be able to fulfill all of those as an officer. For my career goals, I actually really want to go abroad again. I now work in a more global health setting at the CDC, and I see what amazing work the country officers do and in these offices. And I hope to be like them one day. You do have to be, you know, quite experienced to go there. So I recognize that there is still room for me to grow and learn, but I would love for that to be, I would love to make that happen. I think it's just, it's, I think it's always been my goal. And now I think I know what it is. As I mentioned, as a kid, I always wanted to like go abroad and work in cross-cultural settings and in a health-related field. And this is it. I think part of growing is figuring out what exactly your goal is and being able to reach it. And then I think, and also for myself, is I hope to be always able to give back. I think one of the things that I cherish and I'm very grateful for are the mentors that helped me get to where I am at all stages of life. It could be even going back to high school to my parents, but also to the mentors that I've had in my previous jobs in academia and my current mentor in the PHS. I hope to be able to give back to someone younger than me eventually so they can learn from my mistakes because we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We can reach out to people that are more experienced, and I just hope to be able to be that person for somebody one day.
You could check that off, you know, the list now. You're doing this, you know, and that's why I'm, you know, so grateful for, you know, you joining the show here today too. And so one thank you there. But before we wrap up, we're not done quite yet. It is time to cash out. And this is where you leave us with your most valuable piece of advice, biggest lesson learned, to give us a little extra money for the road. So what do you have for us today?
I give you two.
Absolutely. We always
Okay,
love
because
more money.
I touched on one of them, but find yourself a mentor. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. I know I touched on this a lot, but having a good mentor, someone that you trust, and someone with years of experience above you, they can show you a better path to make less mistakes. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. And I say this especially for people that get into careers where maybe their whole family is not part of the career. So sometimes you see, just an example, you know, if someone goes into engineering, it's because, and not necessarily it has to be, but if their whole families are engineers, they might have a better idea. But for someone maybe like me, who's no one in their family has anything to do with health, medicine, public health, et cetera, I'm like figuring it out as I go. But having a mentor and having someone to guide you, it reduces your stress, it can validate your feelings, but also you don't, you can learn from their mistakes, you can learn from their guidance. And my second piece of information, and I know that we talk a lot about careers and they're very, very important, and I'm very passionate about my career, but one of the things that I've learned as I've gotten older is a job is a job. Value your personal life, your family, your friends, and your loved ones, because I have seen it, and not just in public health, but in any discipline, that people have been very successful in their careers, but maybe didn't take care of their personal life and their loved ones as much. And they look back and they say, you know, they may have missed, you know, special moments that, you know, won't happen again. And it is difficult and it is balancing act. Make sure to take care of that side so that, you know, you have a fulfilling personal and career life.
I love it. That's beautiful. We got two for one today. So, I mean, what more can you ask for? Along with a whole slew of, you know, really, really important, valuable information with really, really important and valuable work that you do. So thank you again so much for coming on, Gabriella. This was awesome and you're awesome. So I appreciate you.
Thank you so much for your time.